and more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life. From New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. The latest on health and healing, of course, we always present peer-reviewed literature. Today, why you have to pay attention to your mouthwash, and how what many of you have known for a long time, that an animal-based diet is not good for your body or the bacteria in it, and we'll talk about that. Five really beneficial reasons to eat sunflower seeds. We'll also talk about the omega-3 fatty acids. There's a lot more that they're doing, and how birch helps wounds heal faster. Also, herbal remedies are superior to antibiotics for ear infections, and we'll tell you which ones. And this is published in the peer-reviewed journal of Pediatrics, and according to Cochrane collaboration, I'll give you the latest information on that. Also, what's one of the food items we rarely eat in the United States? Beets. That's right. Well, I'm going to give you some amazing health benefits of why you should eat beets, and these are from Dr. Joseph Marcola. I mentioned about a week ago why bee propolis was so important. I'll give you even more on bee propolis today. Then a more in-depth discussion, our classroom on the air, of protecting your liver. When you consider how many Americans have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, sclerosis of the liver, and hepatitis, it's probably over 50 million Americans. So I'm going to show how to protect your liver. Then, how can we stop the dangerous inflammatory signaling? Julian Warshakowski on that, and Roger Morrison on protecting your liver. My guest in the second part of our program is Bill Snapp. He's the senior counsel for the Center for Biological Diversity, and we're going to give President Obama a report card on the environment, or at least he is. And then I'm going to share my own concerns, and especially for those people who say, but he wants to have a better environment. Does he? Well, is that what he says? What has he actually done? And what about the latest appointments, all coming from big business? In fact, the energy cartels, big nuclear, big oil, that's who he just appointed to his two top positions. So if he tells you he wants to have a cleaner world and a healthier, safer environment, then why are his actions just the opposite? Oh, and in that process, how many times have we heard that Obama is a progressive, or he's a socialist, or he wants to redistribute the wealth, and he wants a single payer coverage? That's where we're going. None of that is true. But we have some hard proof of that today, especially on health care. We're going to play you a clip from a reporter who actually took his statements and then compared them to what he has actually done, including a private conversation he had with the governor of a major state who was introducing him at a big talk, and how the governor of that state was talking about how President Obama was very interested in the Canadian model of health and that they've had for 68 or 78 years. And Obama took the stand. What did he actually say to the audience to correct the statements that he's for a single payer? And then what did he say privately to the governor afterwards? We'll reveal all that. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Most people use a mouthwash, and rightly so, especially if you have gum problems. And if you looked at the type of bacteria, not just how much bacteria, there's different types of bacteria. Some of the bacteria and viruses in our mouth can migrate to other parts of our body, including the heart, and that can be a problem. So keeping your mouth hygienically balanced, pH balanced, and clean is important. That means brushing, of course, flossing, and also using mouthwash and then cleaning your tongue gently with a mouth cleaner, a tongue cleaner. It gets rid of a lot of bacteria. But the mainstream commercial products almost all use some form of alcohol in them. Not a good idea. Quote, using mouthwash is a, quote, disaster for health, increasing the risk of heart attack, strokes. Swelling kills off good bacteria that helps blood vessels relax, so increasing blood pressure. When healthy volunteers use this particular brand containing a powerful antiseptic, their blood pressure rose within hours. That's according to the professor who led the study. And, quote, killing off all these bugs each day is a disaster, when small rises in blood pressure have significant impacts on morbidity and mortality from heart disease and stroke. So what does this mean? We shouldn't use mouthwash? No, we should use mouthwash. But you shouldn't use a commercial mouthwash that has a high level of alcohol and an antiseptic. Using natural mouthwashes that contain natural ingredients, aloe vera, clove, tea tree oil, those are fine. And those do not kill all the bacteria, but they do kill the bad bacteria. And your mouth is still healthy. You put alcohol in there, it kills everything. That's bad. So use a natural mouthwash, that's good. Don't use those that are highly astringent and antiseptic and alcohol, that's bad. I remember once speaking with a formidable educator in the health field, the natural hygiene field. He had been popular in the 1940s and 50s and 60s. And his name was Herbert Sheldon. He lived down in San Antonio, Texas, and he ran a clinic down there. And some of his practices I considered extreme and not beneficial. But he once said to me, when I was speaking with him, he said, Gary, I can always tell whether or not someone has lived the right life based upon the bacteria and the type of inflammation in their body caused by that bacteria, because I can associate eating highly processed foods, animal proteins, and inflammation in the body. And that's because, and here was what stuck in my mind that he said, when you eat fruits and vegetables and grains and legumes and nuts and seeds, they ferment, they degrade in your intestine, and the nutrients are taken out, and then they're passed out through the body. No harm done. But when you take in meat, that meat is not fermenting, it's putrefying. It's becoming dead tissue up against your intestines. And he said, that's where you'll see people passing out massive amounts of toxic material when they've gone on a fast, a juice fast, and they get a colonic. So that kind of stuck in my mind because it's something that my great aunt had said earlier in life when I asked her why she didn't eat, you know, the animals on her farm. You know, I was young, and I was a kid, and I was curious about everything. And she said, they're my friends. And from the cow, I get the milk, and from the milk, I make cheese. And she would give me this glass of milk that had all this cream on top of it. And she'd just stir it around, and she'd put some cinnamon in there. And she said, now that is good for you. It was organic milk from a cow. You couldn't get that today. But then you could. And she was extremely lean, strong as can be, wiry. And she had enormous energy. I'd never met anyone who had that kind of energy, who could work all day as she had her whole life. She lived a very long life and was never ill. And, of course, this kind of threatened everyone else in the family who was not in good shape and smoked and drank. She didn't smoke or drink. And I remember her walking into the pastures, and she could go out, and she didn't have to say a word. The animals would just come right over to her, so she could pet them and give them hugs. And I thought, well, how neat is that? That's just as cool as it can be, and especially little heifers, little cows coming over. And they all wanted love, and they were all given love. And she said, that's what it's about. She said, now just remember, if you take toxins in, if you take poison in, then you become that poison. She says, you want to live a long life, take in clean food. I'd never heard anyone say the word clean food before. That's the first time I had heard it. Well, here is another person, years after that, telling me the same thing. Clean food, living food, and or dead food, creating putrefaction. Now, he was just following in the school of a whole long line of vitalists. Vitalism, taking in energy that creates a vital life force. In other words, it increases your own chi, your own vital life force. And we now know that this is all scientifically provable. Even the whole school of epigenetics and psychoneuroimmunology. You are the environment that you associate with. So just imagine then today, when the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine publishes a study from Harvard University in Nature magazine, and here's what it says, quote, animal-based diets may contribute to the development of inflammatory bowel disease. And it's about the bacteria. The gut bacteria is going to act differently when you have meat and dairy products, and it's a different type of bacteria, and you have a substantial difference. I hear it's 300% difference than when you have a plant-based diet. So today, they're talking about, quote, in addition, gut concentrations, that means the bad bacteria, of a compound linked to liver cancer, rose in the animal-based diet group. The authors note that the diet may contribute to the development of inflammatory bowel disease via changes in gut microbes. End quote. Mind you, now let's break this down for a moment. The most respected scientific magazine in the world, Nature. A good school for scientific studies, Harvard. A group of physicians concerned about health, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, talking about something as simple as you put good food in, living food, clean food, vegetables, fruits, plant-based, you have good bacteria. You prevent disease. You put in dead food, inflammatory food, and you have inflammation and you promote disease, including cancer. Finally, what my great aunt and what Dr. Herbert Sheldon said long time ago, now they're confirming. When I was growing up, we had sunflower seeds because sunflower plants, at least in the summertime, and they were dried, and you'd sit there and pick all those little sunflower seeds out, about 1,000 out of one big flower. And I always thought they were neat because the sunflower follows the sun throughout the day. That's why it's called a sunflower. So the plant actually turns its head as the sun goes from the east to the west. And then when it's done growing and they dry it, then you get the sunflower seeds out. And not a lot of people I knew ate sunflower seeds, unless you did something with them, put a little seasoning on them. I just like them. I like them today. I eat sunflower butter today. It's just sunflower seeds that are ground into a butter, and you put it in the refrigerator, and it lasts a long time, and you just put a scoop of that, a teaspoon of that, when you're making your smoothie, and you're getting a lot of nutrients. But why should we have the sunflowers? Well, a couple of reasons. First, because they're loaded. They're very dense in vitamins and minerals and essential oils. It's a great snack. But here's now what the actual scientific literature shows. It promotes nutrients that protect our heart, vitamin E and folic acid, hence it's cardiovascular protective. It also has been shown to promote the health of our metabolism, especially lowering our homocysteine level. It's rich in methionine, an essential amino acid. And it also promotes cholesterol at a healthier level. How's it do that? Because sunflower seeds contain abundant levels of phytosterols. Phyto, P-H-Y-T-O, sterols, S-T-E-R-O-L-S. Now, these are the nutrients that are very similar to cholesterol. And researchers have linked them to lower cholesterol, healthier levels. It's also a great source of magnesium, and we know how important magnesium is for your heart, for your nervous system, for your muscles to be less pained and more relaxed. So all that is good. And then it's got some good things for the mood in there as well. And we know that that can make a difference. So selenium, magnesium, these are all there. And it's all based upon good science. Now, another thing that we're seeing a lot more of today are the omega-3 fatty acids. Now, you can get them, mind you, from vegan sources or fish sources. I would prefer people get them from vegan sources. But there's a new article in the current issue of PLOS ONE that shows the results of research which indicates that the benefits of the omega-3 fatty acids are far beyond what we had originally thought. Oregon State University did some research on DHA and found that it's important in helping liver processes and to turn off inflammation in the liver. Well, we knew it turned off inflammation in the brain and in the heart, and therefore at the base of all disease is inflammation. So if you can tamper down the inflammatory properties of cytokines, and by the way, two ways you can do that. You can take green tea. Green tea is great at that, and also DHA, the two together. Then we have a tree. It's called the birch tree. And according to the latest research, extracts from the birch tree, which we know for centuries have been used in traditional medicine, mainly in helping the damaged skin around wounds to rejuvenate more quickly. But a Professor Melfort at the Institute of Pharmaceutical Sciences, University of Freiburg, and a whole team took a look at that, and they looked at the molecular mechanisms behind wound healing and found that that there's an extract from the outer white layer of the tree's bark. And it was published in the peer-reviewed journal PLOS ONE, and it works. It helps wounds heal faster. So my suggestion is if you have someone who is having problem healing skin wounds, and the older you get, the more difficult it is for wounds to heal, especially on the legs, especially if there are any that are near the shin because you don't really have any fatty tissue there, and that's constantly breaking. So for a lot of people, I see it all the time. Oh, Gary, I can't heal this. I've had this for years. It just doesn't seem to heal. Now look for birch extract. That can make a difference. Ear infections is virtually epidemic in the United States in children. According to the Cochrane Collaboration, the most respected group of independent scientists in the world, antibiotics are prescribed for 98% of ear infections, what's called acute otitis media. That's compared to 38% in the Netherlands. And to me, that's particularly interesting when it's believed that 80% of these ear infection cases could be resolved without any treatment at all, none. And one study published in the journal Pediatrics looked at a group of children between the ages of 5 and 18. All of them had middle ear infections. The children were blindly split into two groups, those that would receive naturopathic ear drops and those that would receive ear drops and amoxicillin, which is an antibiotic. Over the course of 3 days of treatment, those who received the ear drops alone improved more than those who received the antibiotic, indicating that the herbal remedy worked better than the conventional drug. Now, the Cochrane Collaboration study looked at the benefits of antibiotic use in ear infections and found, quote, only a small benefit, end quote, over receiving no treatment at all. In fact, the benefit was so small, they cautioned weighing it against the potential adverse effects of conventional drug treatment, suggesting no treatment was better in this light. Did you hear about this? Absolutely not, because it would go up against Big Pharma selling those antibiotics to pediatricians and general practitioners to give this worthless treatment to 90% of their patients. You see, the human body is just remarkable. It detects infections and it kills them. And it doesn't require any assistance in most cases to do that. Rest, lots of healthy fluids like juices and herbal teas will do it. But when you start rushing in with antibiotics, you're going to challenge the immune system. And then one day, when there is a need for a life-saving antibiotic, it won't work. A study published in the journal Microbiology, Immunology, and Infection found that herbal drops of essential oils, lavender, germanium, and cloves, was as effective as conventional treatments, specifically ciproflaxacin drops. Here is the conclusion from GreenMedInfo, quote, "The existing scientific literature not only confirms the antibiotic efficacy of herbal therapies within the specific clinical context, but also challenges the reasoning behind the very use of synthetic antibiotics in the first place. The aforementioned natural therapies have no recorded side effects, while both amoxicillin and ciprofloxacin are well known to cause moderate nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, rash, and affect the liver." Okay. Now, that's one of the reasons why, if you have a child that has inner ear infections, before you take them to your pediatrician, why not take them to a licensed clinical naturopath? Because they use natural therapies. They'll use the drops. And that could make a big difference. And finally, I want to talk about beets for a moment, because most people don't eat beets. And that's unfortunate. You should, because beets are good for you. Beets, according to Dr. Joseph Marcola, and we thank him for his report on this, here's what they do. I'll just run down them. Quote, they lower blood pressure. That's good. And in fact, they can do so in a matter of hours. They boost your stamina. That I can confirm, because I've used beet juice before long-distance races, and it's made a difference. It fights inflammation. That's good. And that's mainly because of betaine. And betaine is very important at turning off interleukin-6 and tumor necrosis factor alpha and C-reactive protein. It has anti-cancer properties, and that's mainly because of the nutrients in its color, the deep red. Those are able to reduce multi-organ tumor formations in various animal models. And it's rich in fiber. It detoxifies the system. So, how would I go about doing it? Well, relatively simple. I happen to like beets. I just made this dish up not long ago, and it works. You steam the beet, but not for long, just so that it's not hard. And then you thinly slice it. Then you marinate it overnight. And I like mustard, because mustard is one of the healthiest things in the world, but it also tastes great. So you put like a teaspoon of mustard with some olive oil, and then squeeze the juice of 2 lemons into that, and you stir that, and then you soak your beets in there, and then the next day, you have that into a beet salad. That's one really tasty way to have your beets. Or you can take the raw beet and put it into a juice, and I would put cabbage in with beets. Cabbage beet juice with lemon are one that healing, especially for inflammatory conditions. Stomach, intestine, great for you. Okay? And I mentioned about beef's propolis, that it is really important as a natural antibiotic. This is the latest research on this, that it combats aluminum toxicity. And when it helps eliminate aluminum from the tissues, that is important. So if you know someone who is suffering from aluminum toxicity, according to the peer review Food and Chemical Toxicity, this was done at Jaiwalji University in India, the results of studying bee propolis for chelating aluminum in this laboratory experiment, it was very effective. So they were able to get to get the aluminum out. And we always should pay attention that these vaccines almost all have aluminum. Not good. It's a neurotoxin. Now for a little more in-depth look at a particular organ. That's the liver. Now remember, the liver is responsible for over 500 vital different functions every second of every day. And according to Roger Morrison, most people don't know a whole lot about the liver. One of the very first things that I try to do when counseling people about health is getting to detoxify. And cleaning the liver is crucial, especially people with cancer, because once they have chemotherapy, the liver is overwhelmed trying to remove the toxins from the body and frequently is so damaged that they don't die of the cancer. People would be amazed at how few people actually die of cancer as compared to how many die of the treatment or the collapse of systems in the body due to the treatment. I'll be dealing with that on an upcoming program. Oh, by the way, tomorrow's program, I'm devoting the entire hour and one show each week for the next 3 weeks. Peak water tomorrow, peak food next week, and peak oil the week after. Meaning, have we reached the point where we can no longer sustain our lives based upon the limited resources we have? And I have the most outstanding guest. That'll be tomorrow. And then each week on peak issues. But anyhow, when you realize that early in life, we have peak health inside the liver. But then when we take in soft drinks or caffeine, or we take in fried food, we're really challenging the liver. Alcohol destroys the liver like nothing else. You could destroy over 1 million liver cells and heart cells and kidney cells and brain cells with a single drink. Yeah, but you say, well, okay, Gary, so what? We have 500 billion brain cells. So if I had a drink every day for, let's say, 10 years, I still have a lot of brain cells left. Yes, but you also have dementia at that point. Not a good trade-off. Not a good rationalization. Our liver works all the time. Why? It's our septic system. It's our purification plant. It's there to eliminate cellular waste products like ammonia. You go on a high-protein diet, you're a bodybuilder, a weightlifter, you're going to be having more protein in your body than what your body can possibly use. If you eat in a normal restaurant in the United States, the average restaurant, and you eat the normal protein food, whatever it is, a steak, a hamburger, you're going to have almost 300 to 400% more protein than what your body can use, because the body does not store protein. Therefore, it's immediately broken down through what is called deamination, and one of the byproducts is ammonia. The other is urea. Well, if you can't eliminate that, you can end up with ammonia toxicity, very serious condition, and that can kill brain cells. So that gets rid of that, but it gets rid of all the other pollutants that come into your body. All the medications you take, all goes out through the liver. But the liver also is a metabolizing organ. It regulates glucose, cholesterol levels, it breaks down fats in our digestive tract, it regulates blood clotting, it converts foods into forms that are easier to use. For example, if you take vitamin B6, pyridoxine, the body can't utilize it in that form. It has to break it into pyridoxal 5-phosphate. Then it can use it. Ascorbic acid into ascorbate. It does all these wonderful conversions. Now you look at how many Americans suffer, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, from cirrhosis and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And it's huge. So what can we do? Well, we can start looking at milk thistle. By the way, milk thistle has been used for more than 2,000 years. It helps not only the liver, but also the gallbladder. And it can protect the liver from liver damage. It can normalize elevated liver enzymes levels. So for hepatitis sufferers, you definitely have elevated enzyme increased activity. You need to bring those down. Milk thistle can do that. And also there are specific compounds within the milk thistle that can protect you. And that is crucial. In fact, we can see milk thistle today is something almost everybody that has any form of liver condition should be using. Extracts in the milk thistle can be used on a daily basis, about 700 milligrams, I would suggest. And also, I would include phosphatidylcholine, phospha, P-H-O-S-P-H-A, title, T-I-D-Y-L, choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E, phosphatidylcholine. And you want a high absorption rate, and I've even seen it reduce alcohol-induced liver damage. So that's important. So let's start using something that will help us with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, sclerosis of the liver, and hepatitis. All right, so that's the best on that. Now, right now, again, I like to keep it simple, one nutrient at a time. Now, I'm looking at the clock. I'll do an inflammation tomorrow because I want to do a few things on the environment and then go to our guest and give you the latest report card on President Obama. But first, a few things on the environment to bring you up to date on what's happening. This is from Global Research, from Daniel Jennings. Good news, American farmers are abandoning genetically modified seeds. Why? Quote, non-GMO seeds and crops are more productive and profitable. Here's what the latest information is. A growing number of farmers are abandoning genetically modified seeds, but it's not because they're ideologically opposed to GMOs. Simply put, the organic seeds or the non-GMO seeds are more productive and profitable. Where did this come from? Modern Farming magazine discovered there is a movement among farmers abandoning GMO because of simple economics. Quote, we get the same or better yields, and we save money up front. That's according to the crop consultant and farmer Aaron Bloom. He talked about this. So when you consider how much more pesticide you have to use using GMOs and how much more costly they are and how much more productive non-GMO seeds, it's a movement, and that's good. I'm glad to see that's happening. Also from the environment, this is from Michael Snyder from Sleuth Journal. He says, the worst drought in the history of California is happening right now. Quote, did you know that 2013 was the driest year ever recorded in the state of California? And did you know that so far this is the driest January that the state of California has ever experienced? The worst drought in the history of California is happening right now. Just check out the current conditions in the U.S., Drought Monitor. About two-thirds of the state is experiencing, quoting, extreme drought at the moment. And Governor Jerry Brown says it is, quote, not likely to rain for several weeks. Unfortunately for California, the truth is that the weather in the western half of the country is simply returning to historical norms. Scientists tell us that the 20th century was the wettest century in the western half of the United States in 1,000 years, but this isn't helping California. Now, why should we be concerned if we're living in New Jersey, New York, the East Coast? Simple. Quote, the state produces 99% of the artichokes grown in the United States, 44% of asparagus, a fifth of the cabbage, two-thirds of carrots, half of bell peppers, 89% of cauliflower, 94% of broccoli, 95% of celery, green leafies. California got the market cornered. 90% of the leaf lettuce we consume, along with 83% of romaine lettuce, 83% of fresh spinach, come from California. California also cranks a third of total fresh tomatoes consumed and 95% of the ones destined for cans and other processed food. As a fruit, 86% of lemons, quarter of all oranges, come from California. 84% of peaches, 88% of fresh strawberries, 97% of fresh plums. In other words, all of us outside of California are extremely dependent on the fruits and vegetables that the state of California grows. So don't think that because bad things are happening as far as climate and water scarcity out there that it won't impact us. It will. In fact, Governor Jerry Brown said, quote, I've declared this emergency and I'm calling all Californians to conserve water in every way possible. All over the state, reservoirs are approaching dangerous low levels. In fact, as I reported last week, at one reservoir near Sacramento, water levels have dropped so low that old buildings from the gold rush town have appeared. This is just a few of the reports. Quote, in a sign of severity of the drought, some of the state's reservoirs are at their lowest level ever. Folsom Reservoir near Sacramento is so low that the remains of a gold rush era ghost town flooded to create the lake in the 1950s are visible for the first time. The state's mountain ranges, where runoff from melting snow provides much of the water for California's thirsty cities and farms, have just 20% of the snow they normally would have, meaning they're short 80%. Also, the Fresno Bee says the Pine Flat Reservoir. Pine Flat Reservoir is a ghost of a lake in the Fresno County foothills, a puddle in a $326 billion gorge, a gallon gorge. Holding only 16% of its capacity, Pine Flat is the best example of why there is high anxiety over the approaching wet season. Gone is the healthy water shortage that floated California through two dry years. Major reservoirs around the state need gully-washing storms this winter. Then we have another report. The U.S. Drought Monitor reported 94.2% of the state is enduring some level of drought conditions. Wow. And at least 90% of the state of California has been in drought for almost 9 months. So, what does this mean? What can we take away from this? A year ago, I wrote an article. It took about 3 months of research where I looked at all the different places in the United States, as well as around the world, that were sustainable for the future, meaning had quality soil and weather, was not near a nuclear power plant or gas hydrofracking, that was not on an earthquake fault line, which they also are out there, was not where you're susceptible to drought and then leading the fires. We had the worst fires in Texas history, Oklahoma's history, Colorado history, and New Mexico history in the last 16 months. So you don't want everything burned down, your homes included. We're having nothing but burnt forest out there. You don't want to be at the water's edge, and like right now in South Beach, without flooding, just with high tide, it backs up in the sewer system, flooding Alton Road. Now, if you've been to South Beach, it's only about 8 or 9 blocks between Alton Road and going over to the Atlantic Ocean. And at the north end of that, you have Lincoln Road, the most populous road in Miami. And South Beach, where all the tourists go, it's a beautiful place. Well, now you have water backing up in there, and that's without a flooding. You get a flood in there. You get torrential rain. You just can't go out. It's 2 to 3 feet of water in some of those places. So whether they're doing there, they can't change the elevation of where they live, so they're putting in more pumps. Well, that will only take out part of the water. So that's what's happening. In some places upstate in New York and also upstate in Vermont, whole villages getting slammed with water, more water than what they've ever gotten, and more flooding. So you either have excessive flooding or you have excessive drought. And so I wanted to show people where they could live. California now is not on that list, nor are 16 western and midwestern states. They're running out of water. Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, Nevada, Utah, Wyoming, Texas, they're running out of water, and it's not coming back. So just imagine what's going to happen, how that's going to impact the real estate bubble that has caused the price of real estate be artificially high. What happens when you can't water your lawn? Well, of course, you could convert to a lawn that doesn't require water, a cactus lawn, etc. But for most people, that's not going to go. And then what happens when the value of the property comes down and then the real estate taxes that support the roads, the infrastructure, the schools, the fire department, the money's not there. And then they start being crunched, so they have to give up much of the quality of life and the infrastructure stability they have depended upon. You see, there's a ripple effect, and yet there's not a lot of dialogue on this. They're not looking. In fact, people are still rushing to live in these places because, the bubble, you know, the real estate goes up, quality of life goes up. No, quality of life is going to be hit hard in California. I'm Gary Noll, coming back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you, I'm Gary Noll. Later this week, we will be commemorating the 66th year since Mahatma Gandhi was assassinated. It'll be an hour special right here. We certainly commemorate Martin Luther King and others, but rarely does anyone ever commemorate Mahatma Gandhi. And if you read King's writing, if you speak to his family, you'll realize how significant Gandhi was to the beliefs and the foundational virtues that Martin Luther King lived by. And we have not one, but we have two of Gandhi's living relatives on our program. That's unusual. That's very rare. So, and Vandana Shiva as well. So we have a full hour on Thursday of this week commemorating Gandhi. Let's say hello to my guest, Bill Snapp, Senior Counsel for the Center for Biological Diversity, a national organization dedicated for the preservation of the biodiversity of wildlife and flora, hovering on the brink of extinction, and the environmental protections of lands, waters, and climate necessary for the survival of species. He coordinates the Center's legal and policy work on endangered species and wilderness and energy from Washington, D.C. He's a graduate of University of California at Los Angeles and also got his law degree from George Washington University. He's written a lot of articles and a book, Biodiversity and the Law, and he's taught environmental and international law. And he's also a world-class swimmer and director of the U.S. Deaf Swimming Program and has coached the swim team at the Gallaudet University?
That's correct, and it's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. Yes, Gallaudet University.
Thank you for being with us today. I believe everyone in this audience is aware that we have to separate out what a politician says versus what they actually do, especially when it comes to the environment, because we've seen them ask for the progressive and those who are concerned about the environmental vote and support. And then more often than not, we've seen them either not do what they promised or only do a small part of what they promised. So could you take us through how you've judged or would grade President Obama on what he has done to either improve or diminish the quality of his environmental agenda?
I'd be happy to do that. It's obviously a huge question, but I think I can break it down pretty quickly. Before I give the president at best a mediocre grade, I do want to just reiterate the obvious, which is as frustrating as the president can be quite frequently, he obviously is not as retrograde as the Republicans in Congress, which continue to set an agenda that I think the president feels pressure on and that I think Democrats in general tend to cave to. So there is a larger dynamic here. But as it relates directly to the president, the leader of the free world, it'd be hard to give him anything above a C, and you could make a pretty powerful argument that it ought to be lower than that. Climate change is a perfect example. It's one of the few environmental issues that he actually has used his bully pulpit upon. And he's done, unfortunately, exactly what you just laid out. He's had a lot of flowery and exciting rhetoric at times, but when you look at the reality of his proposals and the reality of his actions in over 5 years in office, he has done incredibly little. And his administration has done incredibly little to actually tangibly reduce greenhouse pollutants that are causing a lot of the problems that you just talked about over the last 5 to 10 minutes. So, and on natural resources and wildlife, he's been frankly even worse. It doesn't seem to be on his radar screen. He, for instance, allowed the wolf to be delisted in the northern Rockies, and now the states of Idaho and Montana are literally butchering hundreds of wolves by the week. Wolves that are still quite tenuous in their conservation status. So the list, unfortunately, is quite long on things that the president has not been up to snuff on.
Let me share with you some of my concerns that I would give him a failing grade on. I'd like your response, please. First, I believe that he has not lived up to telling us the truth about what is really in the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other treaties that could make an enormous impact upon our environment, especially those companies that could sue either states or the federal government and say, you're prohibiting us from doing something there, whether it's mining or deforestation or using the water or polluting, and we believe that you're in violation, and then we would be dead in the water because the judges in that would come from the very industries, the corporations, lawyers, and there would be no appeal, not our Supreme Court, not our Constitution, not our Bill of Rights. No law would protect us. And yet this has been kept completely secret, and the only reason we even know that existed is because WikiLeaks let some of it out, and especially about the environment. I'm very discouraged by what he has not done, knowing full well he's smart enough to know the likely outcome and implications for the Trans-Pacific Partnership going into effect. Your thoughts, please.
Well, these international trade agreements that are negotiated behind closed doors are as bad as you say. I agree with everything you just said. And, in fact, I think they're reflective of the larger problem of corporations controlling our democracy right now. I mean, it's been well stated, and I'm sure that you've talked about before the Citizens United Supreme Court decision and how corporations can spend freely on their favorite political candidates. They do it with both parties. So while the Republicans may be worse sometimes, the Democrats can be just as bad quite frequently. And these trade agreements, because of the anti-democratic nature in which they're negotiated, play right into that agenda. And everything you said is correct. I think we ought to be very concerned about the trade agreements. I think the trade agreements ought to be getting a lot more transparency, and they're not. And the reason they're not is the president knows if sunlight was spilled upon these trade agreements, not many people would like them except the handful of folks who were going to make a lot of money off of them. So, no, I agree. These trade agreements are very bad news for the environment and even worse news for economic equality in this country and around the world.
I'm also concerned that the president has, along with the people he's appointed, all of whom are pro major industry subsidized people, including the former governor who was a top GMO governor in the country. He has given continued financial support, meaning we, the American people, subsidize big coal, big nuclear, and big oil and gas hydrofracking. Plus, he has supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership, even though there are multiple train wrecks that have recently happened. More train wrecks have happened in the last 12 months than the previous 50 years, and creating danger situations. Yet he refuses to back off on this, including opening up for more offshore drilling. So I'd like to know how he could declare himself for the people when the low-hanging fruit is gone, and instead of putting money, not a penny, into geothermal. And geothermal has 10,000 times the potential to be a clean, natural energy source, and we have over 22,000 geothermal major sources in the United States, not a nickel towards that, all of it towards the corporatocracy of the big energy cartels, and he is fully in support of that. Your thoughts, please.
Again, I agree, unfortunately, and just to add more grist to that, the president, again, has had nice rhetoric as it relates to some of these fossil fuel subsidies, which in the United States alone can be upwards of $20 to $50 billion per year. It depends upon how you count, but it's a heck of a lot of money. And I agree with you on geothermal, and look what's happening in the wind and solar arenas as well. Incredible growth, and we're learning even how to store that energy that is created from solar power. So, yes, if we invested even a fraction of the money that we give away to the big oil, coal, and gas companies, we would live in a much more sustainable nation. We would not only have a better environment, we'd have, I think, a better economic condition for our citizens. But he doesn't go that way. And again, I think the president is a child of corporate America. He, if you look at his resume very carefully, yeah, there's a year or two where he supposedly did some organizing in Chicago, and I'm sure he did some good work there. But he has, all of his life has been spent dealing with corporate America and being a part of corporate America. And I think corporate America at this point is a part of the problem. Listen to some of the things that Robert Reich, the Labor Secretary of President Clinton, has been saying. I mean, some of the things, you know, the fact, what he said this morning on Facebook was, this has been the central lesson of American history. Reform is less risky than revolution, but the longer we wait, the more likely it will be the latter. I mean, this is a former Secretary of the Labor, you know, laying it down, quite frankly, that there's a lot of people in this country hurting, and the politicians really aren't doing a damn thing about it.
Yes, I'm a certified organic farmer, and I've taught farming starting with in 1971 at the Fertiller Farm upstate New York and till this day. And I'm appalled at the idea that instead of supporting sustainable farming, which has been shown to have less water usage, we were the ones who invented the drip system, not Big Agra. And also heirloom seeds collecting, getting greater biodiversity. You will not see bee colony collapse in organic farms. You will not see the soil that has been eroded. You won't see a great dust bowl. And yet right now, 80% of the topsoil in the United States in farmlands is so severely eroded because of mismanagement of not having a cover crop. In the wintertime, you should put down alfalfa. So in the springtime, you till that under, and that becomes nitrogen fixing and nutrient reinvestment into the soil. You have nothing on the soil. So the water comes, snow comes, it thaws, cracks and fissures, and it goes all off into the streams. And you look down at the Mississippi. I was just down there filming. You have a dead zone, so polluted, so dead, fish can't live in it, the size of New Jersey at the mouth of the Mississippi. And by the way, we have over 500 dead zones now in the oceans. And yet, instead of promoting reinvestment into the land, into our infrastructure, into trees to help us sinks for carbon. Instead, we have genetic engineering. He supports that. The former lawyer, Michael Taylor of Monsanto, is now head of food safety at the FDA. Tom Vilsack, the former governor, who is the considered and called the GMO governor, was the head of the USDA. So all the people who should be not in power and are in power, and that's because he keeps selecting them, and yet we're not tending to what we need, the quality of our land and soil and bees, the things people don't think about. If you don't think about bees, one-third of all food in the United States is only able to be grown, including almonds, and a lot of it because of pollination, and yet not a word in the current agenda on the environment for sustainability of our food and our soil. Your thoughts?
Again, I agree. It's a chorus of agreement. And to add even more fuel to the fire, just last night, the House and Senate agreed on a compromise farm bill that apparently is going to be before both chambers over the course of the next couple of weeks or so. And it's just business as usual. All the things that you just talked about will continue under the farm bill. One thing you didn't mention is the out-of-control pesticide use that is harming the bees, harming our soil, harming us. You know, there is a better way. It's a way that we already know how to do, as you well know. And I think the Farm Bill is an example, again, of the president's inability to talk about consumption in a logical or rational manner. I mean, he really has bought into the George W. Bush mantra that the best way to help America is to go to the mall and buy some crap. And I think that thinking about how we make our food, thinking about how it is we power our homes and our cars. I mean, his obsession with natural gas, the president's obsession with natural gas, is not only a lie, it's not a clean energy source. It's creating all sorts of economic and environmental problems around the country right now. And again, but he's endorsing it. So we do need to have a leader or leaders who can articulate the type of sustainable growth, sustainable living that you've been talking about. And I agree, the president is, at this point in time, not that person.
I would, first of all, do you have information on your website that could help the listeners in this audience? Your website is biologicaldiversity.org. Understand how they can be a part of putting their voice to getting the change that we need.
Absolutely, and thank you for inviting your viewers and listeners to come to the website. Two things about that website that I think the listeners will find very helpful. The first is that we actually do have action items that folks can take, and that's very prominently displayed on our website. The thing I like about our website and that I quite frequently use myself is that we have a lot of information, a lot of studies, a lot of old press releases that have studies embedded in the release that you can click on. So whether you want to learn about endangered species or power plant pollution or insecticides and the health of bee populations and wolves, you name it, you can use our search engine and you can find out information about that and then plug in to help us out. We would love more people to help us out in this battle. It is definitely an uphill one at this point.
Bill, I wish we had a president that would speak out when they see hundreds of dolphins that have been rounded up in Japan in a bay, the Killing Cove, and knowing that that is unnecessary to do, and without speaking up and saying, you know, who speaks for the dolphin? And when the baby seals are being clubbed to death in Canada, in the Arctic, we should have had someone who was present speak out against this. What does it prove when you can kill a baby-loving seal and beat him to death with a stick? And when you can go shoot innocent wolves that are a necessary part of the balance of nature, that call out the dying and old and infirm from whether it's the caribou or any other species, they're a part of that biodiversity, and someone gets some thrill out of killing them? And we should have someone who has the courage to speak out when there is any form of environmental injustice. And unless we have people willing to speak on behalf of the animals, then those animals have no rights. And rounding up the Mustang horses and making them into horse meat, everywhere I look, I see that there is an indifference to the animal, unless, of course, the American public saw this up close. You see dolphins with a baby beside them and the mother trying to finagle where she can go, where she won't get hurt and protecting her baby, and then watching them being beat to death, and the survivors are watching this. I cannot see how anyone with a conscience would not speak out. But then again, I'm not one of those people that believe that we should put politics ahead of human dignity and spiritual values. Thank you very much, Bill, for being on today.
Thank you for having me. I really had a good time and appreciated it a great deal.
Bill Snapp, S-N-A-P-E. He is the senior counsel for the Center for Biological Diversity, a national organization dedicated to preserving our commons, our biodiversity and wildlife flora, which is really in jeopardy. The website is biologicaldiversity.org. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you very much for listening. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Very powerful piece. And I always believe that we're stewards of this planet. And yeah, especially after watching your documentary, Chew on This, it's gut-wrenching. I was in tears half of the documentary. So I understand the passion for what he's doing. Now, I am one of thousands, Gary, who have been so influenced by you. I always felt I had a lot of responsibility in my life, but somehow I never had the self-confidence to take the risks and do the things that I really, really believed in. And when I did start working with you, all that turned around. And I just came from a retreat, a one-week retreat with you and several other people who have also turned their lives around. And it's always great to get emails from your audience. And this one comes from Deborah, who said that you've made the most important impact on her life. She said that you gave her the self-confidence she needed to turn her life around. Last week, she was appointed as the president of NOW in New Jersey, and she says it's all due to you. So I get emails like that. It's just wonderful. It's just a shout-out to acknowledge the work that you're doing, that we are taking it on. We are getting our self-esteem and our self-worth up and our self-confidence. And I think that's what makes a difference when we talk about standing up for what's right and demanding justice in these times.
Good for Deborah. Deborah has been coming to lectures. She's an educator. And I'm glad to see that she's the president now in New Jersey. She'll be an important voice. We all work together. It's not about me, it's about we. We have to put this in proper perspective, that every one of us should be motivated by something we see, experience, understand from those who have come before us or those who are with us now. I just noticed that there are 750,000 people who've watched the Seeds of Death on just one website. Now, just imagine the responsibility those people have after watching that. How do they feel? I'll bet that at least half or more sent it to someone else because of their concern. Sharing information that inspires us is what people who are coming from their spiritual side do. It's not about politics. It's about caring enough about the world you live in and other people, because if you didn't care about other people or the society you live in, you wouldn't share anything. You'd be the receiver, and it would end there. And that's the culture of excess, the culture of narcissism, and the culture of greed, that the Warren Buffett culture, the Bill Gates culture. But fortunately, for every Bill Gates, for every person in the 1%, we have a million people who are not the 1%, who are giving and sharing and caring. And I just think at some point we'll realize the collective power that we have to take back our planet, take back our rule of law, take back our democracy, take back our republic, take back our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, stop the police state, stop the brutality, stop the unmitigated greed, stop the sense of entitlement that the rich have. And that's how we do it. Share what you have with another human being that benefits you. If it benefits you, it's a gift. Give the gift away. Give it to another person. Thanks, Luann.
Okay.
Let's say hello to Utrice. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Hello, Luann, if you're still there. It is Tuesday, of course, and that means it's open forum on Lead Stories. The airtime is for listeners to have their say.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to it right now. Utrice Lead.